So before I start this morning, I want to make an announcement. But before I make that announcement, there's something I want to say. And before I say that something, I have a question. And before that question, I have a pre-question. So the pre-question is, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, in his gopi form, has a name. And what is that name? Does anyone know? Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's name in his Krishna Leela? Pardon? I'm not sure. I don't know. So anyway, yes? Say that again? I'm not sure if that's the name. Is that correct? Okay. I don't know. So anyway, so the question is, how many of us knows why Srila Prabhupada performed Rath Yatra when he was 5 years old? How many of us? So anyway, yes, Yamaraj Prabhu? That may be so, but the main reason why he performed this Rath Yatra when he was 5 years old was that in Krishna Leela, when the gopis were bringing Krishna back from Kurukshetra, back to Vrindavan, his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, in that gopi form, she was one of the persons who were decorating that cart, preparing that Rath Yatra cart. And Srila Prabhupada was a little five-year-old gopi girl who was assisting that Manjari, who is his guru. So in performing that Rath Yatra to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan, so at one point Srila Prabhupada confidentially mentioned that to Gaur Govinda Maharaj before, sometime in the past. So he said that was the reason why he started this Rath Yatra when he was 5 years old, as he remembered all those pastimes, and he was so enthusiastic and determined to do that. So with that being said, what I want to announce that as followers of Srila Prabhupada Anugas, we want to offer all the children in our community and our congregation, including life members and friends of our community at large and local, the same opportunity to perform these Rath Yatra festivals. So we have asked Mother Mukhya, and she has enthusiastically sanctioned that yes, we can have an annual children's Rath Yatra right here on the property. So if anyone is interested in helping with that, then please see me anytime. This festival will be performed by the children. The cart will be decorated by the children, the aarti, the offering, the kirtan, the serving of prasadam. Everything will be done by the children, and the parents would be there to witness. So this is one festival we want to perform annually, and hopefully it can be a big success with the number of children we have in our community. We can offer them the opportunity to serve in this way. So get into a Bhagavatam verse. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today we're doing verses 8 through 11. So we'll do 8 together, and then simultaneously, we can read through 9 through 11. So verse 8. Is it there? Sri Nanda Vacha Parjanyo Bhagavan Indra Megastasyatma Murtaya Tebi Varshanti Bhutanam Prinanam Jivanam Paya Sri Nanda Vacha Parjanyo Bhagavan Indra Megastasyatma Murtaya Te Vivarshanti Bhutanam Prinanam Jivanam Paya. Please chant. Parjanyo Bhagavan Indra Megastasyatma Murtaya Devi Varshanti Bhutana Parjanyo Bhagavan Indra Megastasyatma Murtaya Devi Varshanti Bhutanam Prinanam Jivanam Paya Sri Nanda Vacha Parjanyo Bhagavan Indra Devi Varshanti Bhutanam Prinanam Jivanam Payaha Sri Nanda Vacha Parjanya Bhagavan Indra Nigastasyatma Murtaya Devi Varshanti Bhutanam Jivanam Paya Mutters Sri Nanda Vacha Parjanya Bhagavan Indra Nigastasyatma Murtaya Devi Varshanti Bhutanam Prinanam Jivanam Paya Sri Nanda Vacha Parjanyo Bhagavan Indra Megastasyatma Murtaya Devi Varshanti Bhutanam Prinanam Jivanam Paya Sri Nanda Vacha Sri Nanda Maharaj said Parjanyaha the rain Bhagavan the great lord Indraha Indra Megaha the clouds Tasya his Atma Murtayaha, personal representatives, Te, they, Abhi Varshanti, directly give rain, Bhutanam, for all living entities, Prinanam, the gratification, Jivanam, the life-giving force, Payaha, like milk. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Nanda Maharaj replied, "The great Lord Indra is the controller of the rain. The clouds are his personal representatives, and they directly provide rainwater, which gives happiness and sustenance to all creatures." Purport: without clean rainwater, the earth could not possibly provide food or drink for anyone, nor could there be cleanliness. Thus, it would be difficult to overestimate the value of rain. So, 9 we can do together. Tam tata vayamanya che varmucham patimishvaram dravya istadreta sa siddher yajanti kratubirnara. Translation: not only we, my dear son, but also many other men worship him, the Lord and Master of the rain-giving clouds. We offer him grain and other paraphernalia of worship produced through his own discharge in the form of rain. Purport: Nanda Maharaj patiently tried to explain the quotes, facts of life to his young son, Sri Krishna. But in fact, Nanda and all the residents of Vrindavan would learn an astonishing lesson as explained in this chapter. 10.
Tache se no pajivanti tri farga phala hetave pumsam purushakaranam parjanya phala bhavana.
Translation: by accepting the remnants of sacrifices performed to Indra, people sustain their lives and accomplish the threefold aims of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Thus, Lord Indra is the agent responsible for the fruitive success of industrious people. One might object that people sustain themselves by farming, industry, and so on. But as previously mentioned, all human and non-human endeavor depends on food and drink, which cannot be produced without ample rain. By the word trivarga, Nanda further points out that the prosperity achieved through sacrifice for Indra is meant not merely for sense gratification, but also for religiosity and economic development. Unless people are well fed, it is difficult for them to execute their duties. And without performance of duty, it is very difficult to be religious. And 11.
Yainam vishreda.
Is there? Yeah.
Yainam vishrej dharmam paramparya gatam naraha kama divyas balobhyat savainapnoti sohanam.
Translation: the religious principle, this religious principle is based on sound tradition. Anyone who rejects it out of lust, enmity, fear, or greed will certainly fail to achieve good fortune. Purport: if a person neglects his religious duties because of lust, envy, fear, or greed, his life will never be brilliant or perfect.
Om Gyana Timandasya Gyana Jana Shalakaya Chakshu Maitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Venama Imam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimati Shila Vrubhav Prabhuti Namane Shri Shri Vrindata Vivira Padapad Pankajaya Padamaya Prabhupada Anupadaya Namah Shri Vrubhavve Imam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivishesha Sanyavadi Paschacha Deshtarani.
So, just to recap a little on this conversation here, is between Nanda Maharaj and his little son, Krishna. Krishna was inquiring as to why they were performing this Indra Puja. And in these four verses, Nanda Maharaj is explaining, is giving reasons why they are performing these sacrifice. And so at this point, Krishna became very concerned there are twofold situations. One, on one hand, his ministerial representative, King Indra, is misrepresenting himself. He was supposed to be representing Krishna, but he is misrepresenting himself as the provider. And on the other hand, his dearmost people, the Vrijabasis, are misdirecting their energies. As topmost devotees of the Lord, we can see here that they're stepping down to a much, much lower level to perform a puja, a sacrifice, which is in no way befitting their category. So, in this, on these same verses, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also gives some of his comments in the Sararta Darshini, and I would like to read some of them. To text 8, his comment is, in this verse, Nanda Maharaj gives the logic behind the worship. Nanda Maharaj said, this is a local custom. So mark the words, same thing as described in Bhagavatam here. It's custom and tradition, not Vedic injunction. Indra sends a rain which is pleasing and gives life to entities such as grass. Text 9. Nanda Maharaj is affectionately addressing Krishna with the word Tata, my dear son. The hint is, through the mercy of demigods like Indra, I have attained a qualified son like you. Therefore, you should not oppose this action. In this sacrifice, there should be no false pride. We worship Indra with materials created by Indra's rain, just as one worships the Ganga with Ganga water. So, one may say that these arguments are pretty logical, just like Arjuna was arguing with Krishna, giving his arguments in the Bhagavad Gita. 118 years down the road, when Krishna would be, now Krishna is 7 years old, when he would be 125 years old, Arjuna was the same age, that's when he spoke Bhagavad Gita. So Arjuna was giving this argument, similar. Nanda Maharaj is giving some arguments that may sound, you know, appears to be very sound. But Krishna is very concerned that something is going wrong here. As Krishna would explain in Bhagavad Gita, his purpose of his manifestation and all the other incarnations, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bharata, glanir bhavati bharata, adbhutanama dharmasya, dharmasya, the rest. Anyway, so, and then he says that he's here whenever there is rise in a fall of religion or unrise of irreligion, and what he comes to do? He comes to reestablish religious principles. He comes to destroy the demoniac. So, my question here, in this case, is this a demoniac activity or is this a demoniac nature? What Indra is presenting here, that they have to perform this worship to him? Or is it demoniac that his father and the other Vrijabasis are performing this activity of Indra worship? So it is stated that one either engages in devotional activities or you engage in demoniac activities. Just like you're either standing on the land or you're standing in the water. There is no space between, there is no category between being on land or being in water. There's no category between that. So similarly, on a transcendental level, there is no category between devotional activities and demoniac activities. There is really no such category as neutral activities. So here, my point here is that Indra's nature and these activities that are being performed, in one sense, can be more termed as demoniac because they're definitely not devotional. And the reason why I say demoniac is that, as we would find later on, by Krishna trying to dissuade his people from worshiping Lord Indra, then Indra retaliates in a very vicious way. Indra retaliated by trying to destroy Vrindavan. Now, does Indra only send rains to Vrindavan? No. He showers rain on the mountains, on the seas, in Mathura, and all the different places. Are the seas and the forests and the mountains and everyone else, do they perform Indra Puja because he's providing rain? No. Does the people in Mathura perform, and with King Kamsa and all of them, do they worship Indra because he provides rain? No. As a matter of fact, Indra was so scared of Kamsa himself. So he can't retaliate with those people, but the Brijvasis, who are simple people, he's wanting to retaliate, as we would see in future verses, that he wants to punish them. Why? Because he's in a position where he can take advantage, like the strong taking advantage of the weak. So that is a demoniac tendency. That is a demoniac nature, to take advantage of people who you can and try to hide from those who you can't. So one lesson that can be brought out here is this, that this is a demoniac nature, that trying to take advantage, trying to force one to perform an activity just because you have the authority to. And on the other hand, Maharaj Nanda is saying that this is sound tradition. It's stated right here, this is sound tradition. It's not Vedic injunction, it's tradition. That's like yesterday Nagaraj Prabhu gave the example of the sages with their lota and the ball of mud. There is also another one of a kingdom. They had a tradition, and even in Guyana until now there are some traditions like that whenever someone passes away, the whole village would mourn for that person. They would all come together and mourn. So in this kingdom, one man started to mourn. So his neighbor come forward and asked, "Why are you mourning?" He said, "Oh, Sargal Singh died." Srila Prabhupada told his story. So he also started to mourn. So like that, a third person came inquiring, "Oh, Sargal Singh died." So he started to mourn. Like that, the entire kingdom started to mourning because Sargal Singh died. So when it reached to the king asked his minister, "Why are they mourning?" So the minister said, "Oh, Sargal Singh died." So he said, "Who is a Sargal Singh?" Minister said, "He does know." Well, he said, "Go and find out." So he went and he was finding out from everyone, "Who is Sargal Singh?" "Well, I don't know." Second one, "Who is Sargal Singh?" "I don't know." So they finally reached to the first person who started to mourn. And they find out, "Who is the Sargal Singh?" He said, "Oh, Sargal Singh is my pet donkey." So like that is all. The tradition goes on without the providence of higher intelligence behind it. Similarly, with this Indra Puja that's going on, it's a tradition that they have been performing this for however long, but there is no sound Vedic injunction to support those activities. And therefore, if there is no Vedic injunction that supports an activity, it cannot be described as divine. So if it cannot be described as divine, then the next description for it would most likely be demoniac. So with all these great devotees, Krishna is thinking, oh, all these Brijbasis, these are my personal associates, and how can they step down to such an activity? So as Krishna would describe in Bhagavad Gita, that he told Arjuna, he said that I first imparted this knowledge to the sun god, Vibhashan, who imparted it to his son, Ikshvaku, and it comes down like that. In the course of time, this knowledge as it is appears to be lost. We found Lord Chaitanya, there was a similar situation, that he tirelessly presented devotional service in its purest form. He establishes the Yuga Dharma. But only 400 years after, it was completely lost. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to work tirelessly to reestablish this Yuga Dharma, reestablish Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition. So, my question is, why does these activities happen after carefully handing down this transcendental knowledge from guru to disciple in such a pure form? Why, after some time, it still appears to be lost, or it's still lost? One argument we can present is that it's the nature of the material world. Because to engage in pure devotional service, one has to be totally unmotivated. One has to be totally selfless. One has to be totally one-pointed. Ahaitukya pratihata, yayatma supersedite. One has to be completely focused and no distractions, of which it takes the most of our energies from our system to do that, and our soul to perform an unmotivated service. That's why Nanda Maharaj explains here that by worshipping Indra, one gets dharma, artha, and kama. Dharma, religiosity; artha, economic development; and kama, sense gratification. We all know of four, we don't know of three. We know of dharma, artha, karma, and moksha, liberation. But here there is no mention of liberation. Even in the Gopal Champu by Srila Jiva Goswami, he also mentions similar things. Just these three are there, dharma, artha, and kama. Liberation is not mentioned. So the point is that any activities that doesn't bring about liberation, it cannot be described as divine activities. So from different angles, we can see that these activities are in no way divine. And it is not in any way disrespectful to say, at least to discuss about Maharaj Indra, to say that his activities are demoniac. Because in this aspect, it is, because there is a loss. Because it is the nature of this world that one take things cheaply. Even within our ISKCON society, we can see that we are getting a lot of psychological pressures to maintain being in the core of our society, because there are so many other organizations that we can see, without any disrespect for anyone, that there's some level of compromises here and there. But to be the true follower of Srila Prabhupada, one has to be really, really straight. One has to be completely straight, like we see on the altar here with Krishna. He's in his threefold bending form, twisted, playing his flute. And then you have next to him Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu. They are showing what we have to do to achieve Krishna. So what are they doing? They're not bending and twisting. They're completely straight, completely upraised. So for one to get Krishna, who is maybe, you know, twisting, playing his flute. One has to be completely straight, in perfect posture, physically and mentally, to achieve that. So anything that deviates us from that path is not considered divine, whether it be in a mode of ignorance, passion, or goodness. As we can generally say that worship to the demigods are in a mode of goodness because you're getting so much benefits. As what Maharaj Nanda is saying here, dharma, artha, kama, you're getting so much benefits. Therefore, it's in a mode of goodness as against demoniac forces. So the point that I'm wanting to make here is that with how Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, yadahi dharmasya, that whenever there is a rise of irreligious practice, my argument here is that this worship of, as what is being performed here, and the worship of Indra in this way, unlike the way the gopis worship Katyayani in a couple chapters ago, they worship Katyayani to get the highest level of devotional service. So that's not bad. But here, they're worshiping Indra as a tradition, and in return to gain economic development, sensual gratification, and religiosity, then that is uncalled for, at least on the highest level of transcendental life. It's uncalled for. It's not in any way in our Vedic tradition that one engages in these activities. So this is Krishna's worry here, as what Srila Jiva Goswami explains in his Gopal Champu on these same verses and in his commentary. Also, Kavi Karnapur in his Ananda Vrindavan Champu explains a similar thing, that Krishna worries about these activities, these completely pure transcendental activities are being watered down and people are deviating. So he's here to reestablish. So even though from his very birth, you saw just in the previous chapter, he were correcting the brahmanas also, that they were performing all these activities and they were missing the point. So, excuse me. So he was teaching them through the medium of their devoted wives what is the highest goal of life. And here again, he's also doing the same thing as a little seven-year-old boy. And later on, when he's 125 years old, then he was explaining what he was doing now. So these activities for our own lives, we should carefully analyze and figure out whether we are performing it demoniacally or divinely. Because there can be very fine lines, even in our very lives, there can be very fine lines in our performance of activities. And if we go with tradition and custom, then the results would not be the same. The results can be very, very different. So these are a few points that I have. If there are any questions, Maharaj?
At the beginning, thank you for your presentation. At the beginning, you were saying that it's like there's the Vrijavasis there acting below their standard. Yes, in terms of the pastime, that was Krishna's concern. Why are they doing that? And it's also very instructive. But isn't this all... it's all pastime. In other words, you wouldn't expect, what would it mean for them to act according to their usual high standard? We can't project what would be proper for us in this material world, still conditioned in most cases, quite conditioned. Our standard would be to be Krishna conscious, God conscious, and worship God as the ultimate provider of everything. Yes, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, tapam yaham aham varsham nigrinam utsitam. I send the rain and withhold the rain. ultimately. So yes, it's Krishna, but we can't impose our standard on the Vrijabhasis. It's true what you said, that ostensibly there wasn't a Krishna conscious or transcendental goal, unlike the gopis' worship of Katyayani. That's a good point. But still, they were totally in love with Krishna at every moment. So how can we deny the strong probability that their interest in there being rain and foodstuffs is so Krishna could be happy? It wasn't that they ever were thinking otherwise. They were all purely focused on Krishna. Why did Krishna correct them? Well, very much for our instruction, for the instruction of people. That's why he comes to the material world, to perform pastimes for the benefit of the fallen conditioned souls. So I know that was one question I had. I had a couple of other questions, but maybe I should stop there.
Okay, so my point is that, yes, we agree it's a pastime that is being performed, but with the high standard of the gopis, Krishna is still wanting to give instructions. He still wants to give them a higher worship than Indra. He wants to give them worship of Govardhan. So if there wasn't a need, because they are the most elevated devotees, then why would Krishna do that? On the other hand, the more, we can say, sharp point of the discussion is Indra's take on this whole subject matter. And that was more like my point of discussion, that Indra didn't take it that he's in a ministerial position as a representative of Krishna, and as such, he has a certain duty to perform. And that duty is to provide the rain and whatever else he has to do. So whenever these Brijbasis or others are worshiping him, he shouldn't take that as that worship belongs to me, or that offering belongs to me. And that if these people don't provide these offerings, then I'm going to punish them. He has absolutely no right to do that. He's in no way in that category, with that authority, to punish someone because they didn't provide or they didn't do what they're supposed to do. So, like you find this a lot in our scriptures with the demigods. They would impose, but you never find any incarnation of the Lord that he imposed anything like that on his devotees.
Conventional Vedic practice, that's the Leela. If they would be worshipping Krishna, then how would they, that would be, the whole Yoga Maya wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
The whole pastimonious aspect wouldn't be there. So they're always on an exalted standard. In the case of the what we heard in the last chapter, that was a little different. The Jagyik Brahmanas, they, as they admitted themselves, they really went off and very clearly. Indra is a whole other subject.
Why would Krishna? Of course, we understand it's a pastime, but there is still a reason why Krishna decides to give them Govardhan Leela, isn't there? Yeah. Okay, so yeah. Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
So demigod worship is a Vedic injunction. I mean, it's not a concocted act, you know, it's a Vedic injunction. Worshipping Indra for rain is also a Vedic injunction. it's also stated in the Bhagavad Gita, from Jagya comes rain and from rain comes green. So these things might be traditional. I mean, the way the Lord was presenting it, really, he was joking with the Brijbasis, but I mean, it's, even though it seems like a tradition, but it's also Vedic injunction. You see, I mean, we cannot deny that. If you worship Lord Shiva, you know, you get a good consort or whatever. You worship Katawani, all these things. And worshiping Indra also, that was an authorized Vedic worship.
Well, to first to answer what you say that Krishna was joking, here is what Sri Kavikarnapur says in his Ananda Vrindavan Champu. He says here, after hearing these bitter words, that's after hearing Nanda Maharaj was speaking, my dear son, in our family line, we have been observing the Indra Yajna for a very long time, and he goes on. So when Nanda Maharaj finished speaking, then Krishna is here. After hearing these bitter words, Krishna smiled mildly to hide his feelings and then refuted Nanda's presentation. So from this, we can understand that it wasn't that Krishna was joking. And actually, in the Bhagavatam, there are just a few verses of what Krishna is saying, but in these other commentaries by the Acharyas, there are elaborate arguments that Krishna presented. And here in the Gopal Champu is also stated where Krishna was very angry. It's stated like that. So that's one point of, you know, being joking. So Krishna wasn't really joking. As far as Vedic injunction, there are Vedic injunctions on these things, but in which section? We're talking about on the transcendental plane here, and those sections are Karmakanda sections. So Krishna's point is to bring us out of that Karmakanda into pure devotional service. So that's his whole objective. So therefore, in pure devotional service, those things aren't sanctioned, not by any means. Any other question? Yamraj Prabhu, not sure whose hand was up first.
Yes, thank you for a nice presentation. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm according to my understanding that if we worship Krishna, then all the demigods are pleased. So, in that case, we're in love with Krishna, the gopis are in love with Krishna, so we're worshiping Krishna, so the demigod should be pleased. And so, somebody might ask, okay, well, why did Indra get mad or things like that? You know, so that's my question. So
yeah, so anyway, the point is that because Indra, due to pride and his position, that he actually forgot his real position. Just like in the Brahma Vimohan Leela. Lord Brahma forgot his position. Indra, in the same way here, he, because of so much opulence and so much facilities, then it's more difficult for them to keep that balance. That's why it's described that even with Lord Chaitanya's mission, even the demigods are wanting to come here because there's not so many distractions. We have more suffering here, not as much as in the lower planets, but we have enough that can keep our intelligence in check and keep us in balance and understand our position. Whereas on the higher planets, it's a little more difficult because there's so much facilities for sense gratification, enjoyment, sport, and all of that, that it becomes a little more tricky for one to keep their balance in devotional service. So that's one of Indra's problems. Madan Mohan Prabhu?
It just feels like the etiquette isn't exactly correct, because Indra, we can think of him as a Savakarma devotee. He's a devotee, yeah. But he hasn't got through the Anartha Nivritti stage.
Okay.
He still has influences, and Krishna's dealing with him also, and that's a considerable point that when the child does something, kicks, or they have different examples, mm-hmm. It's not the same as somebody who's demoniac,
right,
in one sense. So he's a superior in that regard. I had another point, but I forgot it.
Yeah, anyway, so that's why Krishna dealt with him, as we would learn in this chapter, that because he's one of the close, one of, we can say, Krishna's inner circle, being his ministerial representative, that Krishna didn't deal with him the way he dealt with Kamsa or Jarasandha. So Krishna very, very kindly dealt with him, just like he dealt with Lord Brahma, because they are his minister, they are his we can say his top guns. That so he dealt with them in a very particular way to bring them to a higher understanding. And we see that with Srila Prabhupada, with many of his managers and his leaders, he would not get on their case, like in public, or try to put them down. If he has to chastise them or correct them, he would do it in a certain atmosphere, and he would, so that they can come up to, you know, the understanding that Srila Prabhupada wants to.
I remember the second part was, it's a lot of times explained that the mother instructs the daughter to instruct the daughter-in-law.
Right.
So, as Maharaj was pointing out, these are instructions for us, as you pointed out, right, to come from the Karmakanda section to the pure devotional service section, because for us it's the eighth offense in chanting the holy name. So he's doing many things at one time. He's expert and clever, and so he's instructing them, just like with Yudhisthira, there was that whole thing. He wasn't having all the difficulties.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And Maharaj? It's also it's actually here in a, I think it's like a few verses before or after. It's right here. The same point is made.
So then in one sense that kind of answers the question, you know, why is he instructing the Vrajavasis? Mm-hmm. I admit that you may find some reference that he wanted to instruct him as well. But it seems his main purpose was to teach him the lesson. That's why he knew that by interfering with the Indrajagya that Indra would get mad and all sit down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and
they were not really, I mean, it's hard for me to understand how they were in Maya. They were in Maya, they were in Yoga Maya.
Yeah. They were definitely not in Maya. So for someone to perform a Indra Puja is in no way to say that the Brijvasis were in Maya. They're Krishna teaches like he does by one activity, then he gives so many lessons, or he can manifest, just like when Arjuna on the battlefield, he was shooting one arrow and then it turns to thousands of arrows. So Krishna is like that. He, by teaching Indra this lesson, he was manifesting so much pleasures for all his devotees and thus the world to follow. So like that, he was performing these activities and giving pleasures to the Brijvasis, his whole Govardhan Leela. And for everyone after that to follow in devotional service in performing these activities. So by one activity, so much can be accomplished.
Yeah. Tradition is not completely rejected. There's a verse in Bhagavatam that gives four pramanics or evidence. Tradition is actually included. There's a difference between established tradition and even Arjuna Jaya, so destroy family tradition and
Yeah, actually, I do agree with you, dear Maharaj, because tradition is there, and tradition originally comes from Vedic injunction, because these traditions were in line with Vedic injunctions. For example, making an offering to Indra, that's there, but they made an offering to Indra as being the person, that very important person who the Lord appointed to offer them some facility. So they offer respects to him in that way. Just like if the finance minister for this country comes here, we're not going to say, oh, we're not going to offer you any respect or, you know, disregard you, because it's actually the president whose energy you're working on. No, we still offer him a lot of respect and honor, but in conjunction with the president. So similarly, we offer these demigods with these traditions is being offered in conjunction with the Lord, as the Lord being the head. Just like I remember when I first joined this movement, after some time I told my Guru Maharaj that I'm always remembering the devotee who brought me to Krishna consciousness. Like I can never forget him. I always remember him and I have a certain honor. And he told me that's a good attitude one should have. That because of that person, even though he may say, well, you may say he's not the goal, but because he provides so much, then he should be offered some, you know, respect and honor. So like that, these demigods, whether by tradition or injunction, they should be honored. But if they take that for themselves and forgets who it belongs, then that's where the problem comes in. And that's in this Leela, that's the case. So there's nothing wrong with Vedic injunctions as long as it's in conjunction with, nothing wrong with Vedic tradition or customary traditions. If it can be linked to Vedic injunction, then that's okay. Okay, so that's about it. Think that's all. I'd like to stop here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.